Here we go on another Sunday morning in Sin City. Just after 8 o'clock, and you're listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We're here at the same time every weekend, live in the Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio in Las Vegas. Today, the we includes guest co-host Chris Wynn, a regular on Las Vegas radio. Chris is filling in for Caleb Herring, who's in California visiting his grandmother, who isn't doing too well. Thoughts and prayers your way, brother. Looking forward to having you back in studio next week. Also here, producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who moonlights as the locker room reporter for Vegas Golden Knights radio game broadcast. And after the news that shocked most of the hockey world a few days ago, we will solicit Mags for his knowledge, his thoughts, and even maybe a few opinions on that. I'm sure you got them in behind the tripod, making sure we torture our Facebook Live viewers. The best damn intern in the business, even if he's the only intern we have. It's Spencer Ostrowski, better known as Caleb's not here, so the Wiz! How's that? And Caleb was going to try to call in, so if he's calling in, Matt, go ahead and grab that phone and see if he's there. I was going to let him do the introduction. Listen, the show also streams on the LV Sports Network, and as I mentioned, can be seen on Facebook Live. The page is called Out of Line. That is Outta Line. And you can watch out on personal Facebook pages as well. If you got something to say and you're awake enough to call in and say it, the Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio line, 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
I'm the Wiz, and this What's on Tap, sponsored by our title sponsor, Residential Bank Corp, with offices locally in Las Vegas and Henderson. Oh, you didn't. All right, whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, Residential Bank Corp is the company to turn to for all your home financing needs. Residential Bank Corp, funding America one neighborhood at a time.
No, the
tries to penetrate again, lost the ball, and Coleman has it. Marvin Coleman down the left side. Marvin all the way under, lays it up and in.
Go. All right, listen. Caleb Herring on the phone right now. We're here live in Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studios. We'll get with
Sunday
acquainted.
Sunday morning, baby. Yeah, you gotta love it.
Chris Wynn in studio with us. A lot going on last night in Vegas. We had the big UFC fight. Conor McGregor
exactly.
Making his return after a couple years. UNLV. I'm not gonna say shocking the world by any means, but definitely overachieving. According to myself, and I think most people watching the game, you get 35 points out of a guy like Bryce Hamilton. You know he's got pretty good athleticism, but that's a hell of an output. And a triple-double, we haven't seen one of those here in 20 years. And Marvin Coleman III gave us one of those last night, which was pretty cool to watch. New Mexico was third in the conference going in, UNLV second, and pretty damn cool. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But right now, do me a favor, Mags, and hit Nightcap.
And Canadians go to extra rounds. Former Golden Knight Tomas Tatar, the lefty, cruising right wing. Down the middle, he picks, he scores! Fleury tried to spin around and reach back with his glove, but Tatar had him beat.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Well, the puck stopped here for Gerard Gallant last week, and I remember when I first heard the news, it's kind of just head-shaking. And first of all, Caleb, man, thanks for joining the show. How was the trip out to Cali?
Hey, man, it's been great. I leave you guys for one day. And it seems like it's just chaos right now. But, no, it's going good right now. California's treating me well, as always. And,
yeah, Caleb.
What an exciting weekend in Vegas, though, this weekend.
Yeah, Caleb, I didn't know what I was walking into here. It was kind of craziness right out of the gate. We had a little something different going on for your Sunday.
Hey, it's Sunday morning, man. And it's out of line. You wouldn't expect it any other way, right?
That's exactly. It, man. How's your grandma?
Oh, man, she's doing great. I mean, she's doing as good as she can. It's good to see her in good spirits. And good to visit, of course, visit all the family and, you know, everybody gets together, so, but things are good. I'm glad I got the chance to come out. Me and the wife both had the weekend with some space. My son has a 3-day weekend, so we thought we'd take advantage of it and get out here, visit the family, make the rounds this week. So,
No, it's good.
You know, I'm glad I got to do it, you know.
No, I'm glad you didn't. We're only going to dock you half a day's pay, too, for doing that, because it was for a good cause. So we'll take care of that. But you know, I know, Caleb, you know, the hockey segment you usually stay out of a little bit, but you definitely are involved, and you know the Golden Knights. And, you know, I'm going to ask Mags here in a second, too, but you hear that Gerard Gallant gets fired. You know, it seems to be a theme in Las Vegas. You know, this guy didn't even get three full seasons, and in the first season in a franchise's history, a makeshift team goes to the Stanley Cup Finals. The next year, the Golden Knights should have for sure gone to the second round last year, and they lose in Game 7 of the Sharks in a game they're up by 3 goals with under 10 minutes to go in the game, and a bogus penalty is called, and it changes everything. But they should have gone to the second round. The Sharks went on to the Western Conference Finals, so you could say maybe the Golden Knights would have done that in the second year. This year, they're still hanging on to a playoff spot. They still have the roster to do it, and yet they fire their coach in midseason. Now, the one thing I can say positively about it is two of the last three Stanley Cup champions fired their coaches in midseason. So maybe there is. St. Louis did it last year, and a couple years ago, the Washington Capitals did it. So the question is that a good move or is it not? But, Caleb, were you shocked?
Absolutely. I mean, considering that it's not been that bad of a season, I mean, it's not like things were terrible. I know this has been a tough, that the end of the homestand was pretty tough, and there were some games that were lost consecutively and by big margins, and giving up a lot of points on your home ice was a bit concerning for a lot of people that were involved. But the season as a whole, outside of that skid, hasn't been terrible. They've played quality hockey at times. They've had their ups, they've had their downs, and they've looked tired at times, and I don't know how much of that is coaching necessarily, but, you know, obviously there's something that's going on that maybe we're not privy to, maybe we don't get behind the scenes, and maybe there are some chemistry issues that were causing the lack of effort on the ice that management decided it was the best thing to go another way. And like you said, there's been teams that have had success doing that mid-season change of direction in the past, so it's not something that's just a fork in and everything for the Knights. They can rebound. They can't come back. You know, they got a couple of road games to get under their belt, maybe get their focus back, and then come back to Vegas with a new mindset. But it was shocking. There's no doubt in my mind that it was shocking, especially, like you said, with this early success that the Knights have had. For them to make a big change like that midseason kind of feels like pushing the panic button and a little bit unnecessarily, but we'll see how things shake out.
Chris Wynn, at first I'll ask you, and then Chris Chapman, same thing. But, you know, the only reason I could see doing this, I mean, yeah, they you know, they were saying that, you know, typically Gerard Gallant's a guy that gets motivated out of the gate, and they weren't coming out on fire. But I thought Peter DeBoer, you might not like him because he was the Sharks head coach up until a month and a half or so ago, but he is regarded amongst his peers as one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. So when a guy like him comes available, your team is stumbling a little bit, you make a change. I'm still not agreeing with it. I'm trying to look for a reason why it happened.
And I was not someone who agreed with it. I thought it was something that was, as Caleb pointed out, I thought it was a panic move. And I also thought about this dynamic. It is an absolutely unique dynamic, guys, as far as firing Gerard Gallant after 2.5 seasons behind the bench for the Golden Knights, and then hiring the coach who just happened to be fired, you know, just a matter of weeks ago, at the rival team. We've been covering, Brian, you and I have followed the NHL or been covering the NHL for decades.
Yeah,
I have never seen something like this where you make this decision as far as the coach is concerned. It is exactly like if the Boston Bruins were to fire their coach after he took them to the Stanley Cup Finals the year before. Say they fire that coach, and then they hire the Montreal Canadiens coach 5 seconds later.
Haven't the Red Wings given their coach like 5 years?
You understand what I'm trying to say, though. Yep. You understand the point I'm trying to make. Yep. It is an extraordinary, and that's the first thing I thought, was an extraordinary dynamic that you're going to bring in this guy. And look, the rationale is going to be this. The rationale is going to be that he in his first season with two teams, he took him to the Stanley Cup Finals. Now, he was the head coach at the beginning of the season with those two teams. He wasn't someone who came in halfway through the season or, you know, 20 games into the season. He was somebody that was with the team all year long and took those teams to the Stanley Cup Finals. So if that's what the Golden Knights are expecting to do here, it's going to be something that's going to be the first time ever that Peter DeBoer has done that. So we'll see what happens. I'm curious as to the reasoning behind it. Caleb kind of alluded to it. I think there is a rainbow elephant in the room as far as the relationship between George McPhee and possibly McCrimmon and Gerard Gallant. I think there's much more to that as to why he was dismissed as far as production. I don't buy the argument that it's about production, given they're 2.5 years into existence as a franchise, and there's been so many just unbelievable moments for this franchise. I find it very hard to believe that those are the reasonings why Gerard Gallant is no longer the head coach here.
Chris Chapman now, Mags, you know, you've got your finger on the pulse of this team and have since mm-hmm. they've literally come here and kind of see what's going on and what's been happening. You know, there's no question this is a shock. And I'm going to start it with this because I want you to run with this ball. We've talked about this several times in the show and all year. This team is lacking a knockdown, lights-out player from the blue line. The best teams in the NHL have a guy on the blue line that's a superstar. You need one. Now, Shea Theodore and Nate Schmidt, who's, to me, underachieved this year a little bit, even though he started late, those two guys are what we need. We need more of them, and we need a better version of both of them in order for this team to have success in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I don't care how good Peter DeBoer is, if he doesn't find someone before the end of free agency, they'll have about $2 million in cap space to spend at that time. If they don't find one and can't fit him in, this team can't win in the playoffs without him, especially with the way their goaltending's been this year.
Well, a couple things. A touch on what Chris said about hiring the coach of your rival.
Mm-hmm.
This is courtesy of my friend Shang Peng, who covers the San Jose Sharks. He actually covered Vegas the very first year they were here.
Yes, he did. We know Shang.
So,
can't forget a name like Shang Peng.
In the history of the NHL, this is the first time in over 80 years. Now, it has happened twice before. In 1934, the Montreal Maroons hired Tommy Gorman from Chicago, who knocked them out of the playoffs. And in 1931, the Leafs hired Dick Irvin, also from Chicago. The funny thing, both those years, the Maroons and Leafs won the cup. So, history is on the side of the Golden Knights, if you believe
going
that,
back to 1934.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you got to go back to 1934. So this is the first time in modern time since the NHL expanded from 6 teams to 12 teams that a team hired the coach
of a rival team
from the team that eliminated them the year before.
That's crazy.
So I'll say a couple things. I didn't like the way it was handled by the team. I have zero issue criticizing them on the subsequent firing and the way it was handled with Ron Futrell from Channel 8 after the firing, because Kelly McCrimmon, when he spoke to the media, said this wasn't a decision that was made in haste. This was something we thought about, which to me tells me they had every intention on firing him in Ottawa, where there was zero media coverage. And they could do it at 7:30 in the morning Vegas time.
Terrible.
And nobody would really catch on to it until later. They could avoid having to face the media because there was only one media member from Vegas in Ottawa at the time. And I believe that was David Shane.
Yeah, the beat writer.
Now, others found their way there. I know Kevin Bollinger from Channel 5 was there. I know Justin Emerson.
It was very strategically done.
It was done
seriously
at the worst possible time for the media because they did not want to deal with the media.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they had time after where they had to face questions from the media, but relatively, the media that talked to Kelly McCrimmon was not media from Vegas. It was all Canadian media. There was one local guy there. So when you tell me that we thought about this, yeah, you did. And you did it at a time when there would be no media scrutiny from any of the local media, which to me is garbage. You don't do it that way.
Especially
the other thing that pisses me off, if you thought about this, why do you bring him on the road trip? Why do you send him to Buffalo for that first game?
He got voted to the All-Star game as the coach. Why would you wait? You think do it before so he doesn't get to coach the All-Star game?
He's not coaching the All-Star team. He's not coaching.
I know he's not. Rick
now, but
I'm just saying that's a terrible, because he was voted to do that. Why would you?
That's you can't look. I from that perspective, that's irrelevant to me. You can't keep a guy so he can coach. If you're going to fire a guy, you
Chris,
don't not fire him.
But the point
because...
is, the firing, it wasn't the most necessary thing
in the world.
And the loyalty this team has showed to the broadcast team from last year, now to the coaching staff, is starting to smell a little bit, man.
Well, the reality is there probably isn't a whole lot of loyalty. And, I mean, I don't mind.
I wish the Ford family would learn about a lack of loyalty. Maybe the Lions would get rid of some people and win once in a while.
I don't mind the hire for Pete DeBoer because I think he's a really good coach and I think he's going to help this team. But look what happened last night. Maybe the problem wasn't Gerard Gallant. Maybe the problem is some of the players you have on the team.
There's no question about it.
Once again, you're down 3-0 in the first period.
Chris, this team is in trouble, and again, one of the things they're in trouble with, and I know Caleb Herring's still out. Are you still with us, Caleb? Hey, is he still there? Caleb?
I think he's gone.
Yeah, no, I'm still here.
Okay.
He fell asleep.
He might have fallen asleep. Well, I know when Caleb heard a coach was fired, the first thought is, wow, they fired Bobby Houck in Montana.
Yep. Why? That was unnecessary. A long distance low blow.
You're not close enough to hit me.
Ouch.
But when it's all said and done with this move, you know, I do like Peter DeBoer as a coach. Of course, as being a rival to those Golden Knights and what happened last year, there's a bitter taste. But I don't look at him personally. I think he is a good coach. He understands how to motivate his players. He definitely understands the game of hockey as good as anybody out there. It's not that I have a problem with. Again, like Chris said, it's just the way that it was done. And looking at this team going forward, as you mentioned, Caleb, they've got some games on the road now. They've got one game on the road. They're going to Boston on Wednesday night, I believe, or Tuesday night. And then they've got the break. A 10-day break with the All-Star game coming up, and then 3 more games on the road before they finally get back here, like February 6th. It's like gone for a month. All I know is hopefully this All-Star break, these guys get together cumulatively and talk about, you know, amongst themselves, like, look, man, a coach just got fired because how lousy we're playing. How good?
Well, they all said that after the fact.
That's already started, right, Mags? That's already started, right?
Yeah,
they already started doing that whole process.
They already started with the it's our fault. We didn't play good. Yeah, guys saying, well, you know, maybe we'll be able to play a little harder for DeBoer. It's like, you know, I don't like the whole situation. And Fleury said it best. He's like, you know, you can't fire 15 guys. This is our fault.
Yep.
And he said, you know, hopefully it lights a spark and it makes us a little bit more motivated. But I mean, I'm paraphrasing. He didn't
Gallant
say those
be,
words.
You know, the thing is with Gallant, we know he's going to get hired right away, whether it's by the Detroit Red Wings or the new Seattle franchise.
I think the writing's on the wall with Gerard Gallant.
Yeah,
I mean, well, his buddy Steve Yzerman is now running the Red Wings. And look, the reality is if you're a Red Wings fan.
He was running the Red Wings when he was with Tampa Bay.
He was.
you have to think that the combination of Steve Yzerman, who built the Tampa Bay Lightning into what they are today, mm-hmm. and Gerard Gallant. That could be the potential to be the next group of, or, you know, the next great Red Wings.
Hey, the brain trust. I'll take it.
And the fact, too, Mags, that Jeff Blashill is on his way out there.
Yeah,
He's lost the room in Detroit.
But look at that guy. What's he been there, 5 years? They give him 5 years, you give Gallant 3. And they haven't made the playoffs 4 of the 5 years after the longest playoff run in history. They haven't made the playoffs 4 or 5 years with Blashill in there. And yet he gets 5 years, and Gallant gets 2.5. I'm shocked. Listen, Mags, go ahead and hit Blazin'. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. It is Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango, the Montecito Crossing Plaza. 2 happy hours every day, a Hail Mary pass from Centennial Hills Hospital, and it is America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. We are there every Monday night during football season, hosting the best Monday night football party in town, and I just found out I'm really happy about it. I shouldn't say it that way, but we're not doing the Super Bowl party this year. I kind of got out of that. It's the first time. Why I'm happy is I'm going to actually get to sit back and not host a party and watch a Super Bowl for the first time in 7 years. So I'm kind of happy about that part of it. But it'll be cool. Just I'm doing all those Golden Knight watch parties for them, so I got a break with the Super Bowl, and I'm really actually happy about that part, just the chance to watch the game. But Mags, go ahead and hit the interviews, and then we'll get into Blazin'.
UNLV today. New
Mexico. They're in third place right now in the Mountain West. Talking with the two stars of this game, Marvin Coleman, Bryce Hamilton. Guys, what do you attribute to the turnaround? One of the things for sure is this guy started getting more playing time, and I'm talking about Marvin Coleman, and this team has been a different animal. Bryce, what's he meant to the team with the extended playing time that Marvin's getting?
Marvin, he's a huge piece for our team. You know, he's worked his way, and, you know, he had the opportunity now, and now he's just definitely taking advantage of it. And, you know, he's just playing his best basketball, and he's the leader of our team right now, and he's just leading us.
Marvin, you hear people walking by yelling triple-double. You talked about it in there, the guy giving away your secrets. But 20 years since that has been done. It's a hell of an accomplishment in basketball to get one of those in your career. How does this feel, man? Thomaston Mack Center, locally here in Vegas. What are you feeling, man?
It feels great. I gave all the credit to my teammates, and I'm going to keep doing it. You know, guys like Bryce, Amari, and Jonah, they make it easier for me to make plays for them. And, you know, they make shots. So, you know, that's the credit to my teammates.
Triple-double is one thing. How about 35 points in a game? Bryce, it was so nice, I think, for a lot of these fans as you see him walking by, congratulating. But to see the Thomaston Mack, the biggest crowd I've seen yet this year, we still want to get it obviously more full. But 35 points, man, come on.
It's a good accomplishment. You know, I just want to thank my teammates, though. You know, they found me in good places for me to make plays. You know, it wouldn't be happening for them.
He's a bucket getter. He's a bucket getter. That's what he is.
I'll ask you guys both where this team is at right now. I know you're going to say you're not satisfied. It's a politically correct thing to say. But where you got to be feeling pretty good now, over the 500 mark, what, 5-1, 4-1 in the conference now? Pretty damn good, man. Where do you feel this team is at?
I mean, obviously our energy, our team morale is great right now. But like you said, you know, that's not a political answer. We still want to, you know, we still want to prove ourselves. We were picked, I think, like 7th or 8th in the Mountain West. So, you know, we still have a statement, you know. We still have to play San Diego State. We still have to play Nevada. And, you know, after those games, we'll see where we're at.
Yeah, just what Marvin said, you know, we're never going to be satisfied. You know, we're playing our best basketball right now. You know, we just want to keep on playing it one game at a time and just be the best that we can be.
Last thing, 99 points. I mean, you couldn't get 100. I know Coach pulled you off to the side, but everyone's like, come on, get 100. They still got their free tacos. But 99 points. Triple-double, 35 points. This team is on an upward swing. Last question again. What can we expect from this team going forward?
We're going to always compete. You know, we're going to always come out every single game, compete, play our butts off. And, you know, we're just going to play for our fans.
Bryce Hamilton, Marvin Coleman, congratulations.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what. I actually really enjoyed watching the game yesterday. I mean, this team, it was a game of runs. They played well. There is no question. Marvin Coleman, man, if I question Otzelberger on anything right now, it's you didn't see the ability of this kid at the beginning of the season to get him in the game, because really he is the catalyst that has changed this team. And Bryce Hamilton's confidence seems to be growing with every game. Dropping 35 was pretty damn impressive yesterday. And again, a triple-double. You just don't see that at UNLV, and that's indicative of the fact that it hasn't been seen here in 20 years. So what do you think, man?
I was impressed that Marvin Coleman's out there with triple doubles. First time, what, since 99?
Yeah,
since Mark Dickel back in 1999 pulled the feat. So this is a pretty impressive progression for a guy like Marvin Coleman, because you talked with TJ in the last few weeks, and he was very high on him and thought that he could become more of a piece in that rotation, and he's been able to play much better, I think, in the last couple of games. So for a guy who basically was considered to have walk-on talent to be able to step in on that team and be a factor, I think, is pretty impressive.
Chris, Caleb, before we let you go, I want to ask you about this UNLTV team. I know you heard about it, and if you didn't get a chance to see the game. Really impressive being there. It looks like Otzelberger has this team believing they're buying in. I really like watching him coach on the sidelines as he coaches players individually, and I really like the way that he does it. But this team right now seems to be clicking. And ever since that Pacific loss, it's like, you know, they lose to the ocean, and then everything changes. It's like that can't happen. And some teams can get motivated, and that can carry them to a victory and change their season. Some teams can go in the tank after something like that. This looks like it was the former. Caleb, what do you think, man? Were you excited about it? And do you think this is a house of cards that is going to collapse as the Mountain West season goes on? Or do you think this team, this is something to build on, and they really can finish in the upper tier of the Mountain West?
It definitely is something to build on. I think at this point, the momentum is carrying them to where you think it could last. I mean, you still got San Diego State left, and I mean, the schedule is not going to get much easier the rest of the way out for conference, but if there was any time for it to crumble, it would have been against New Mexico. I think that's what people would have thought, especially on the road. But to come out with 99 points and a big-time win like that, it's huge for them, I think, going forward. And I think the more they get wins like this and the more they keep this streak going in the conference, the more they start to believe in themselves. And there's one thing about, like, the confidence in sports. Once you start believing in yourself, you start taking those shots with more confidence, you start executing your plays, playing defense a little harder, you buy in even more because the plan's working. Whatever your coach is telling you in the locker room, whatever the messaging is, which is obviously on point because these guys still have a statement. They want to prove some things to people out there that doubted them before. You heard the players talking about it. They want to prove something, and I think they're playing with that kind of chip on the shoulder, and it's a brilliant job of messaging that by TJ, and he's doing better than expected in his first year. I think everybody could agree on that at this point, especially with conference play. So I think the players have the belief in themselves now at this point, especially, like I said, with a win over a New Mexico team that's top of the conference and always is top of the conference, for them to beat them and a pretty convincing win. It was a game of runs, like you said, but back and forth and getting there. And then you look at this roster, and there's nobody on this roster that's good enough to, I think, be entertaining the thought of leaving to enter into the draft or anything like that. There's nobody that we should expect to be headed out after this season. So the pieces that are here, outside of the, you know, the seniors and things like that that'll leave with natural, you know, graduation, things like that, the team should be back. The core pieces of the team should be returning, most of them at least. And then you can only build on them from there. That's, to me, exciting about Rebel basketball, because if they finish on, you know, anywhere in the top half of the conference right now at this point, keep the main pieces, get some more chemistry over the offseason, a full offseason of work with TJ, adding some new recruits, possibly some transfers that can contribute immediately, you got the building blocks of what could be a good team, a good roster. And that's more important than having a number one player or a four-star, five-star recruit coming in and putting all your chips on that. I think college basketball is more about the cohesiveness of the five guys on the court at any given time. And I think finally, after a series of transfers and declaring for the draft that I think derailed the UNLV building blocks at the basketball front, I think you got a team that's going to stay together and be around for at least 2 years together and start to build that way. And I think that's a benefit for the basketball program at UNLV. And TJ is going to be at the head of that. He's doing a great job of it.
And Caleb, you mentioned wins, of course, and it translates, by the way, to the football field as well, too, for you on the football field. It's getting wins against teams you're supposed to beat, right? And then it's getting wins against teams that you're not necessarily expected to beat, a.k.a. the Utah States, teams like that. Obviously, San Diego State, some other programs around the Mountain West. That is what can turn a season that's supposed to be either mediocre or subpar into a season where, as Brian pointed out, you can finish in the top half of the Mountain West.
And think about it. They're a couple of overtime wins away from this being a really great season. I mean, the teams that they couldn't find a way to beat down the stretch, and you know, Cal and Kansas State early in the season, and those games went down to the wire. They finally managed to pull off an overtime win against Fresno, but imagine those wins going their way. Those are big wins, too, against a marquee team, a Pac-12 team, and even Cincinnati, they had, you know, taken down to the wire as well. So those overtime games early where maybe they didn't have those winning ways yet necessarily, and, you know, beating Wyoming and Fresno State now in conference play in overtime, those two games have shown their growth and the ability to close out when earlier in the season we were trying to figure out who's going to close it, how they're going to finish games. The depth was a question because they just couldn't play deep into their rotation. But now you start to see the teams coming together, TJ starting to trust more people with the ball and with possessions, and I think the team's growing and evolving before our eyes. And it's, like I said, you got to credit TJ for what he's done, because as a coach, he's the one that's kind of pushing his agenda and pushing the players to achieve and be their best and putting them in the best situation for them. And that took a while to learn and figure out who those game-time players were, but he's figuring it out, and it's translating to wins. And it's good for Rebel basketball. I'm excited. The crowd was a little bigger this time around. I saw pictures of it. It was, you know, a little bit bigger crowd. I don't know if it's going to get back to that old glorious Thomas and Mack days that it used to be, but this season at least. But it's exciting to see that people are starting to pay attention, and And there's reason to, because the team's actually performing well in conference this year.
No doubt about it. I will not mispronounce his name anymore. He will no longer be TJ Otzelfarter. He'll be TJ Otzelberger as long as they keep winning. But seriously, some good stuff we saw. And a huge game to me against Reno, going on the road. You can get a win there, really build some confidence, because next Sunday at 1 o'clock, Bagdum's pointed out to me, and I've watched that team twice now, San Diego State. They're number 7 in the country right now and undefeated for a reason. And this is a team that plays a swarming, tenacious defense, something Steve Fisher has built, that defensive culture. He brought it with him from the University of Michigan, along with Dutcher, and Dutcher is continuing that legacy at San Diego State, that they are a very defensive-minded team. They have continuously been in the top echelon of defensive teams in the country, even though they've been in the Mountain West. And this year, this is a legit team that right now, I mean, I'm not going to say they're good enough to win a national championship, but I'll tell you this, I'm not going to say they're not. I mean, when you're undefeated 19 games into a season, you got to start taking notice, and obviously everyone has, with them being ranked number 7. Listen, Caleb, I appreciate you. Make sure you text your picks. We're picking both games today. I'm trying to give Wiz a chance to beat me, and we're going to pick up both games, so make sure you do that. We're going to go to break. On the other side, we're going to come back with Michael Babcock, man, TMZ Sports. And I've got a few more things, and I'll tell you on that other side that was blazing as well. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio. Be right back.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. I'm on the wrong one. Well, today's special. Okay, there we go. Where's that at? It's the fact that Major League Baseball is looking at another ugly scandal. This new form of cheating has reached another low, in my opinion. Adversely skews not only the careers of the players and coaches involved, but their actual statistics. I mean, if you know what pitch is coming, you might as well be juicing, right? Mike Babcock joins the show, TMZ Sports. And Michael, first of all, again, thank you for getting your ass out of bed early again on a Sunday morning for us. I know, you know, it's your day to rest, and I get you up all the time, and I greatly appreciate it. So I want to make sure, I said in the New Year's, I got to make sure to start thanking people in advance than after the show when they don't hear it. So thank you first for joining the show. But second, how dark is this situation going to be for those involved?
Oh, man. Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Brian. It's my pleasure to wake up early. Man, it's gotten really bad for baseball. I think Rob Manfred's got to be laying up at night and wondering when this thing is going to end, because it's just become an endless cycle now of people pointing fingers, of retired players pointing fingers, and it's gotten very ugly. And I know, you know, this, it's common sense, and from the people I've talked to, that baseball really wants this thing to end now. I mean, I think we have at least one more shoe to drop with the punishment for the Red Sox and for Alex Cora, even though he's lost his job. He's going to be facing some type of penalty here from baseball. But that's the one shoe that's left to drop that we know about, but who knows who today, tomorrow, next week is going to come out with some allegation that we don't know if it's true or not, but that'll kind of shock the sports world.
Yeah, you know, I'm blown away still by this, because how do you figure when you take guys like Alex Bregman and you take Jose Altuve and statistics now? I mean, if you're getting buzzed that a fastball is going to be coming down, it's like being juiced. I mean, you know what's coming. It's a huge advantage. And, Altuve is one of the best hitters I've seen, but again, now does that mar him? Do you start saying, "Well, wait a minute, how many of these statistics are real now, especially in the postseason, when you're getting tipped off as to what the pitches are?" Now, it is not illegal to give signs if you're at second base and you can see the sign. That's why you cover your mouth. That's why pitchers constantly have conferences. But you can't hook up devices, man. I mean, are we going to find in the long run that Bill Belichick was involved in this somehow?
Wouldn't surprise me. You're right. If people have been cheating in baseball, trying to cheat in baseball for 70, 80 years, and it's been going on forever. But obviously, the difference here is, and I think a lot of people feel this way, when you're using technology to steal these signs, that's when it crosses the line. And I think in some people's minds, Jose Altuve all the other great players on the Astros, I think people are going to question their careers and wonder how much of it was aided because they had this high-tech system at their ballpark. You know, on the other hand, you look at Altuve on the road, and the guy's got great numbers on the road, too. So it's confusing. I don't think there is a clear answer as to how much help they got from this. And I think, you know, to a large degree, that's why players weren't penalized here, because it really is, it's hard to try and determine actually how much help they got from this. You know, would they have won the World Series if they didn't have this? I think that's an answer to a question that we're never going to have, and I think that's why the players kind of came out of this unscathed as far as getting penalized. But I think you're right. I think people are going to question. People are always going to know. And when you say Jose Altuve's name, this is not going to be forgotten. I think this will be part of his legacy forever now.
So, Mike, a lot of us, of course, that cover Major League Baseball or follow Major League Baseball, we don't have a dog in the fight as far as, like, the competition in the World Series. But you're right there in Los Angeles. I have to imagine there are a lot of fans walking around there right now who are Dodger fans that have absolutely steam coming off the top of their head, Mike. They're in Southern California, given the fact that both the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox have people that are involved in the scandal.
Yeah, I live in L.A., obviously, and I'm a Yankees fan. I'm from New Jersey. I'm from the East Coast. So me personally, too, because the Yankees in 2017 in the ALCS lost to the Astros, and then obviously the Dodgers twice lost in the World Series. But you're right, just walking around town, people are really upset. And I'm not hearing much, you know, that we should be awarded, Dodgers should be awarded the World Series, although you do hear that from some people. But I think people are just primarily disgusted because they know there's no way to fix this. They're not going to get that back. Who knows if the Dodgers will make the World Series again? These were two opportunities the Dodgers had to win a championship, and you know, possibly because of the cheating that the Astros were doing and the Red Sox were doing, you know, that you just can't go back. You can't win those games. So I think people are really upset that this went on and that they were possibly robbed of the championship.
Now, players are not making the Hall of Fame, and justifiably so, because of juicing. You've got guys statistically like Barry Bonds that, they're first ballot Hall of Famers, and they may not get in until they die. I think one day, like they did with Jim Thorpe, they'll wait till they're dead and give it to the and award the bust to their relatives. But my point is what about Jose Altuve? This is a future Hall of Famer. It's a lock. He's locked right now. He could retire tomorrow, and he's a lock to the Hall of Fame. Do you view him the same way you view people that used performance-enhancing drugs when it comes to playoffs to the Hall of Fame, saying, well, his statistics, how can we really look at these statistics? How long was the cheating going on, and how much did this affect where his batting average is? How many hits he got? How many home runs he got? Isn't that the same where maybe when it comes time for him to get voted that they have to look at this?
Yeah, I do, and I think what happens, you know, over the rest of Jose Altuve's career, I think that'll be important, because I think most people are going to assume now that they're not going to cheat and they're going to try to do this.
No, they're going to insert one now. It's going to be like inserted into his ass. So you won't be able to see it buzz. It'll just be pushed. You'll see him get a little he's going to add a new wiggle to his batting stance, and the wiggle will be the buzzer.
CeCe Sabathia posted something on Instagram. It was like a picture of Altuve, and there was a metal detector before he got the home plate. So maybe they have to do something like that with them. But I think, assuming they don't cheat anymore, I think let's see how Altuve performs the rest of his career. Let's see what the numbers look like. And I think a lot of this is also going to depend on the opinion that's formed by baseball writers. Is, are we going to get past this now? Are we going to harp on this? And I think that whatever the narrative is around it, you know, down the line, whenever it's time for Altuve to be voted on and we determine if he's a Hall of Famer or not, I think if this is just kind of something that we've gotten past, I don't think it'll affect them. But if this is, you know, something that people are still horrified by down the line, I think it has to affect him.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you. I mean, I think it has to be looked at. And again, it's mind-blowing that now we're going to have to start using security as the players enter the field now. You've got to have like a security guy that they got to have a metal detector before they go on the field to play. This is getting ridiculous. Michael Babcock, TMZ Sports. Michael, as always, man, appreciate you, brother. And we'll be talking to you again in the very near future.
Cool. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike.
Let's take a real quick break. We'll come back on the other side. We got to talk NFL. It is Conference Championship Sunday, one of my favorite days of the year. That's on your way. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, Brian Feldman. To my left on your radio dial, the one and only Chris Wynn. Directly in front of me, Chris Magnum Chapman. And to my right, behind the tripod, hiding back there, we'll get him on for his pick in a minute. We have Spencer, the Wiz, Ostrowski, and of course, Caleb Herring in California. I want to thank Michael Babcock again for coming on. And real quickly, before we get into the football, I just want a couple things that we didn't mention, and that is Blazin. There's a few things, Blazin, that have to be mentioned. I mean, they just do. One of them is Alex Ovechkin. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw it, but he got his 26th hat trick last night, and against the New York Islanders, a pretty good team. His third goal gave him 34 on the season and was career goal number 692. Milestones? He passed Super Mario Lemieux for career goals and tied our boy Stevie Yzerman in Detroit last night with 692. He is ninth now, tied with Yzerman on the all-time list. Obviously, he will move into eighth place pretty soon. His 26 hat tricks is the eighth most in the NHL history. Since debuting in the 2005-2006 season, he has as many or more hat tricks than five NHL franchises, including the Los Angeles Kings, Colorado Avalanche, your New Jersey Devil Mags, the Wild, and the Golden Knights, which I don't think should be on that list, but they're an NHL franchise. They've got 2.5 years. But this guy right now, okay, you know, you got guys in there like Connor McDavid, who's unbelievable. You got the kid from Toronto that I love as well.
Auston Matthews.
Yeah. You got some great players. Alex Ovechkin is the best player in the National Hockey League. You look at what he's done over time, and the guy is still going strong. Granted, the third goal was an empty netter, but did you see his second goal in the game, the move he made to score that goal? Chris, he's as good as anybody in the National Hockey League, right?
Yeah, he definitely is. I mean, he's a guy who will go down as maybe the greatest goal scorer in NHL history. I mean, considering the game is so different than when guys like Gretzky played. But, you know, it's one of those things as Liverpool scores again. Thank you. But he's one of my favorite players to watch. And, you know, when they get on the power play, he just sets up shop in the left circle, and it's like,
and he sits on the doorstep, and you can do nothing about it.
They know it's coming. Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. The teams know it's coming. But, you know, he's just ridiculous. I'm not a fan of the Golden Knights. I can't be. So it was nice to see Ovechkin win the cup, put all the critics to bed. And it looks like they're on their way to maybe winning a second one, because that team is really
good. They're clicking on
really
all cylinders.
Good.
They're getting good goaltending. And also, real quick, another Blazin I didn't mention. Conor McGregor last night makes his comeback. It's been since November 12th of 2016 since he's fought in the UFC. Wins it in 40 seconds. His second quickest fight ever. I think he beat, was it Jose Aldo he beat a couple years back? It was like 13 seconds was his number one, the quickest he's beat anybody. He looked tremendous. The leg kick was as powerful as it's ever been. It didn't look like he took all that time off, and he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. Pretty cool at T-Mobile Arena last night in UFC 246. Actually entertaining and enjoyable. And I don't know if this is Blazin or not, but Zion Williamson is finally going to make his NBA debut on ESPN Wednesday night as his Pelicans take on the San Antonio Spurs. And I want to know, guys, do you think at all the Pelicans are thinking, Ja Morant, what did we do? Because how dynamic and exciting of a player is Ja Morant right now in the National Basketball Association?
I said he was going to be the best player in this draft,
and
because
I just
didn't believe that Williamson had the durability. He just doesn't quite have the body. So, I'm not sure, but I liked Morant. I said the Knicks should have taken him if they had the opportunity. I mean, it didn't work out that way for them, so they got RJ Barrett. But nonetheless, Zion, you know, we'll see what his career turns out to be, but Ja Morant's been awesome.
And by the way, the way I see it, though, Brian, there's not a snowball chance in hell, though, that the Pelicans would even second-guess themselves at this point, given the fact that Zion Williamson has yet to even set foot onto an NBA court in a regular season game.
Well,
so
the point is, the bar
it's more
so
a wait and see type of thing.
It is, but the bar is very high with what John Morant has done as a rookie. And as a matter of fact, I'm not going to watch the game Wednesday night to see his debut because I'll be at the UNLV game, or I'll be watching the UNLV or listening to that game. However, we're going to assign the Wiz to watch that game, and you'll report next Sunday and let us know, is Zion Williamson the real deal? Now, granted, it's his first game back. You can't judge everything on one game, but you'll be able to see how good he looks in an NBA uniform on a real NBA court in a real NBA game. And San Antonio, what a good game to bring him in because they stink. So a perfect game to bring him in to see what he can do and show his wares against them. Listen, guys, only a few minutes left. NFL, huge day today. Tennessee Titans, wow, what a surprise coming from the sixth seed and a quarterback that hasn't thrown for over 100 yards in either one of the playoffs games he's played in yet, and yet a running back that is the size of a middle linebacker. And can you imagine, Chris, trying to tackle freaking Derrick Henry in the open field if he's coming at you?
I can't even imagine having to deal with that, but I think the Cinderella story ends today as the Kansas City Chiefs, in my opinion, are the best NFL team left standing, and I think they end up moving on to the Super Bowl, to Super Bowl 50.
We'll let that be your pick with the spread. What do you think, guys? We'll go through this real quick. Wiz, I'm going to let you. Actually, I'll start it off because that way you can pick against me if you want. Okay, I am going to say that the Green Bay Packers are going to cover in San Francisco. I think that they'll find a way to cover. That defense in San Francisco is staggering. They made the proper change by getting Witherspoon the hell out of there last week and getting him out of the cornerback because he was killing them. That was their big problem, was over the top. But I think Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers, I think they've got the running game to offset the passing game to neutralize that defense again. I still think San Francisco has the edge to win the game, but I think Green Bay is going to cover, and I'm going to go with the Packers. There you go. Now you can pick either against that game, pick the other game, whatever you want, Wiz.
The smart thing would be to go for the 49ers, but I'm going to go and double down on my take to make Caleb look even worse. I'm going with the Tennessee Titans to actually beat the Chiefs and go on to the Super Bowl.
Wow, interesting. Bags?
They're not beating the Chiefs, but I think the weather in Kansas City, it's cold, it's windy, it's conducive for the way the Titans play, running the ball, keeping the ball out of the air. I think they keep it a little closer than people expect, but I think San Francisco is going to blow the Packers away.
Well,
they are walking into a hornet's nest. 49ers are clicking. They're in big trouble.
7.5 points is the spread. Mags is giving them up. I'm taking them. And Chris, we'll let you pick a game.
I think San Francisco wins, but I don't think they cover. I'm on board with you. I think that it's a low-scoring game. I'm thinking 21-17. The Niners get it done. Both defenses show up today, guys.
Chris, did Caleb pick a team or no?
I never got a text.
Okay, well, we'll let him pick. I'll text him after the game. Listen, appreciate y'all. Chris Wynn being in the house. Michael Babcock, TMZ Sports. Chris Chapman, our producer. Thank the Wiz. Caleb Herring for calling in. And, of course, thank the UNLV players for joining us as well. Out of Line, we're here every Sunday. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Thanks to Residential Bank Corp, our title sponsor. We're out. Bye-bye.